This is Word of Mouth on New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Coming up today, Maine chef Kathy Gunst leaves the hassle behind for holiday entertaining. And while Lego makes headlines with a new line for girls, a Lego maniac reminds us that the colossal brand was on the brink of failure just a few short years ago. We'll hear about how Lego stacked up a global revival. But first, a high-tech solution to a mystery frozen in time. In 1948, a plane crash in a remote Alaskan mountain range killed everyone on board. 24 merchant mariners returning to the U.S. from Shanghai and six Northwest Airlines crew members. The crash site was quickly covered by snow and eventually entombed in ice, where it remained until 1999. It was then that a pair of former U.S. Air Force pilots turned their hobby of solving forgotten aviation mysteries into an investigation. A debris field was discovered, and in it a severed arm preserved in the ice. That kicked off a decade-long project, an unusual collaboration of scientists trying to figure out to whom the arm belonged. Here with more is Christine Gorman, senior editor at Scientific American. The investigation is detailed in the current issue. Christine, welcome to Word of Mouth.
It's my pleasure.
Let's first talk about the search for the wreckage of this aircraft. I understand it was a pretty dangerous undertaking.
Yes, it was. McGregor and Milliken, Kevin McGregor and Mike Milliken, were, as you said, retired Air Force pilots. And they had looked from the air all over the area and found nothing. So they realized the only thing they could do was actually climb up onto the glacier and see if they could track the descent of the debris themselves on foot. There was snow even in the summer. There were grizzly bears around. There were crevasses, you know, in this backcountry that could swallow them up. And but fortunately, on one of their visits to the site after they found the after they went up there, they found the wreckage, and then later they found a severed human arm with the hand all the way up to the elbow, embedded in the ice.
Well, in documenting it was McGregor and McMillan, this kind of amateur sleuths, let's say. Here's McGregor talking about the dangers of tromping around on the glaciers. This is from a slideshow they produced.
It's like an eggshell. You can be standing anywhere on the glacier, and it can collapse right underneath you. So you've got to really read the glacier. You've got to know how it bends, how it turns, where the crevasses are, where they were, where they might be covered new, or where it's very, very stable. Where the debris field is right in the middle of the glacier, so you've got these streams running every which way, and you've just got to be very careful. Parts of the airplane stick out where the water is, others are embedded in the ice. You've got to be there to really understand it. The glacier is treacherous.
Pretty extreme there. What drives Kevin McGregor and McMillan to pursue solving old mysteries like this?
Well, Mark and Kevin are very dedicated pilots. Mark also happens to work for Northwest Airlines, and he had heard about the crash of this old Northwest Airlines flight from 1948 and really felt like he wanted to help bring closure, if you will, because, of course, there were survivors of all 30 men on board, and he was already up in Alaska. So the two of them combined their know-how and went looking together.
So they did uncover this appendage, and after that, state trooper freed it, actually gave it to a medical examiner, and then embalmed the remains. It actually took 9 years to finally identify the merchant mariner whose arm was recovered from the wreckage of this Northwest Flight 4422. Why so long?
Well, first of all, there was an extensive search. I mean, with 30 men, you would think that they would all have fingerprint records on file, but of course this was 1948, not the current day. So only some of them had fingerprint records because they're merchant mariners. They're not officially part of the military and the military record except during times of war, as happened during the Second World War and immediately afterwards in Korea. So the fingerprint record was had holes in it. The hand itself was badly damaged, so the Alaska ME could not make an identification based on the prints. And frankly, you know, the hand and arm had been there 60-some years, or 50-some years, I guess, excuse me. So even the DNA technology that was available at the time could not produce any results.
So McGregor and McMillan kind of dig in then. They found a scientist specializing in mitochondrial DNA. Eventually, a woman named Odile Loret from the Armed Forces DNA Lab in Rockville, Maryland, she came on board. Why did she agree to participate in this project?
Well, she's actually an expert in ancient DNA. The reason you use mitochondrial DNA is because there's so much more of it in the cell than nuclear DNA. She had been doing some studies on identifying DNA from Neanderthals using mitochondrial DNA, and the military asked her for help in identifying some 800 unidentified remains from the Korean War. And they had been embalmed in formaldehyde, and their DNA had been damaged, and she had developed techniques and might be developing, you know, and needed to develop more techniques to figure out how to identify these Korean War vets.
I guess she did have a process for extracting DNA. How did she do it?
She learned, I mean, part of the reason that she was interested in the Alaska crash was that instead of having, you know, 800 unknown remains, she had 30, the possibility that this arm could belong to one of 30 people, so she had a much smaller subset of people. And in doing that, she developed a process for extracting the organic material from the bone and getting just enough of the mitochondrial DNA for analysis.
We're talking about how a pair of amateur investigators and a team of scientists solved the mystery of a severed human arm found at the site of a 1948 plane crash on Mount Sanford in Alaska. Christine Gorman is with us. She's editor of Scientific American magazine. Okay, so while this DNA process is being developed, there are parallel efforts to identify the arm. Talk about the fingerprinting techniques that were brought into play here.
Well, up to this point, no usable fingerprints could be gotten from the arm. They had faded and deteriorated, but a rejuvenating fluid that had been used to identify victims of Hurricane Katrina was just being used, and two fellows, Michael Grimm and Ted Robinson, used it to rule out 10 of the victims based on the fingerprint cards they already had.
Okay, so the author behind the Scientific American article is a forensic genealogist named Colleen Fitzpatrick. First, I got to say, she had me at forensic genealogy. What is that exactly?
Well, forensic genealogy is a field of research that goes where laboratory scientists fear to tread. People like Colleen look for the relatives of deceased people. Their searches take them all over the world. What they're trying to do is trace family lines to find the appropriate people, the right people, with whom they can compare DNA, because you have to have, for mitochondrial DNA, you have to have a living person to compare to the remains.
So where does this bring them?
So she is, you know, helping. I mean, I've lost count now of how many people have been identified by this point of the investigation. But between the preliminary DNA matches and the fingerprint matches, by this point there are basically two candidates left. The family of one of the individuals she found very quickly, but they declined to give DNA for a comparison. So Colleen started looking for the other individual, a man named Frank Van Sant, for his relatives. He was a merchant mariner from Bennington, Vermont. She went to the Bennington Museum, which pointed her to County Limerick in Ireland. And, you know, through just regular old shoe leather investigation, found distant relatives that were connected up to Frank Van Sant from a common relative about 100 years ago. So she found the match, the right relatives to test, and they were they consented to give DNA. And lo and behold, it was a match for Frank Van Zandt.
It's just a fascinating story. She I guess this search for the common relative brought her to County Limerick, Ireland, you know, the place of origin of the family, which just gives us a sense of, you know, tracing our stories back where they get to. Meanwhile, a big breakthrough with fingerprints. What happened there?
Well, it turns out that fingerprint part of the team had been asking for official fingerprint documents from the National Maritime Center, which has all the fingerprint records of merchant mariners. And that word official was what tripped them up, because instead of asking for the official records, they really should have asked for the unofficial fingerprint records as well, because it turned out that many merchant mariners, the captains of the ships they would go on, would take fingerprints just, you know, on their own. And so there were a number of unofficial records of fingerprints. And so when they asked for the unofficial records, they were able to, based on the rejuvenated tissue and the unofficial records plus the official ones, to rule everyone out except one. And that turned out to be Van Zandt as well.
Well, multi-layered story, many different efforts and talents. Thanks so much for taking the time to run through it with us, Christine.
It's my pleasure.
Christine Gorman, she's senior health editor, health and medicine editor at Scientific American magazine. We do have a link to forensic genealogist Colleen Fitzpatrick's fascinating story on the arm in the ice. You can also see a slideshow by these amateur sleuths who kickstarted the whole investigation. All that's at wordofmouthradio.org. Now stay with us, how grown-up Lego maniacs helped to revive a beloved brand, and they're passing it on to the next generation of builders. That's when Word of Mouth returns in just a moment. You're listening to Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio and online anytime at wordofmouthradio.org.